intelligence. Sattva Avalokan is the source of all existence within material creation and the source of all rasa. The basis and support of all rasa. So as you see, this is another section, and it's a long section where expanding on Ishvara, Parama, Krishna, the whole section just expanding on that one. He's the Lord of all lords. There are many Ishvaras. All of us are little Ishvaras. But there's very powerful Ishvaras, the demigods, and others. And each of them are deriving their power from the Parama Ishvara. So, following that first verse, the line of the first verse, this section is expanding all of that. So we'll be covering the first three verses just now. The position of Goloka, starting with the Dham of the Supreme Lord, that comes first. And his Dham, Goloka Dham, is the topmost, and then there's the ones below the topmost. And then, so Devi Dham, Mahesh Dham, Hari Dham, Goloka Dham are the four that are identified. We'll be discussing that. Then Brahma starts with Devi Dham, or the abode of Goddess Durga, and then going up, Mahesh Dham, Lord Shambhu, and so on. So the picture just went out. So let's chant the verse together. Very interesting graphics, huh? Okay. Here we go. Take two. Some trick to this? No good. Look at that, those arrows flying through space. Okay, that's correct. That's correct. It's supposed to look like that. Lowest of all is located Devi Dham. That's where the bottom arrow is. You'll see in a moment. Next, above it, is Mahesh Dham, the abode of Mahesh. Above Mahesh Dham is placed Hari Dham, the abode of Hari, just now coming, not working, help, here comes the Mahesh Dham, So you've seen this poster, and the poster is illustrating this lower region, looks like a football at the bottom. That's one of the universes, and that one, each universe is presided over by Devi or Durga, and she was not cooperating. What's going on? Okay, anyway. And above them all is located Krishna's own realm, named Goloka. It's not cooperating. It's not moving. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, who has allotted their respective authorities to the rulers of those graded realms. What do you want me to do?
The pointer, if you can point it that way, because the thing is there.
And so I don't point it here, I point it over there.
Yes, ma'am. Oh. It's just a display pointer.
Like the camera's pointing over there. Okay.
It's unwholesome.
It's unwholesome. Right? This last message is as you see this slide, the summary or the essence, which is each of these graded realms, that's Bhaktisiddhanta's language, graded, you know, lower grade, middle grade, upper grade, and graduate. So graded realms is invested with appropriate graded powers and opulence via the potency of the Supreme Lord Govinda. That's the essence of this verse. Okay. The Supreme Lord Govinda, by his own direct and indirect power, has constituted those respective potencies of those realms. That's Bhaktisiddhanta's language. So now let us take a look. Here's the poster without all the things on the side. And if you look in the left margin, you'll see Devi Dham, then above that Mahesh Dham, on the left margin, Hari Dham, and then Goloka Dham. So we're going to do a zoom in on the lower, that sphere at the bottom. And there you see on the left margin Devi Dham, and you see the inside of one universe, and all those golden spheres, there are other universes, because according to the Vedic picture, there's myriads of universes. Certainly there's a limit to them, but there's so many, one cannot count them, that's how many. And half of the universe is filled with Garbhadak ocean. Reclining on that Garbhadak ocean is Garbhadakshayi Vishnu. You see at his feet is his consort. And from his navel is growing a lotus flower with an interesting stem, at the top of which is Lord Brahma. So Brahma is the topmost. He's the speaker of this Brahma Samhita. He's at the top of the universe in the 14 planetary systems. And over to the side, to the left, by that stem, that's Durga. It's her place, it's her domain. Then we see the seven coverings. So somebody had this question of the seven coverings, so I didn't even have to research it. Here they are. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, false ego, and mahatattva. I had it right. Seven, who had the question? Which are the seven?
He's gone.
Okay. He's watching remotely or something. Someone will pass the message on to him. So the five gross elements, then false ego, than Mahatattva. And if you're interested in finding out more about those seven, you can read in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, because it's a really amazing description as Gopal Kumar passes through each of them. He meets the presiding deity of each layer. He has a little conversation with them. They say, oh, stay here, it's very nice. And he gives them one of these and keeps going. So then we see above, or on the outside of the layers of the universe, we see an ocean, the Garbhadak ocean, because the universes are floating like footballs, Prabhupada says, floating on the Garbhadak ocean, the causal ocean. And the causal ocean is the ocean on which Mahavishnu reclines. You see, up to slightly to the right, about 1 o'clock in the picture of that universe, there's Mahavishnu, and at his feet is Rama Devi, just like Lakshmi is the goddess of Narayana. Rama Devi is the goddess of Mahavishnu. So within that region above Devi Dham, in the left margin, you see Mahesh Dham. There's Mahesh riding on that white bull, Nandi, and his consort, Durga. Because in just a moment we're going to see the glance of Mahavishnu glancing over Durga. In fact, if you look very closely, you see some white light emanating from his eyes, Mahavishnu, heading towards Durga. See that? And then just above is, with that ocean of the causal ocean, River Viraja or Karna Ocean. Each of them are the same. Say it again. Causal ocean, Karana Ocean, Viraja River, they're different names for the same thing. That's that which is just on the outside of the coverings of the universe. And on the other side of that river is another shore. The other shore is the Brahmajyoti. So, at the southern part of the Brahmajyoti, within the Brahmajyoti lies Haridham. See that white, that yellow effulgence, looks like a sun shining above the cloud? That's Sadashiva Loka. We're going to hear shortly about Sadashiva Loka. And you see below Sadashiva Loka there's a cloud, and then at the southern side of the cloud it's really dark, like a rain cloud, dark. And the lettering that below that says Mahakalapur. We're going to hear more about Mahakalapur and Sadashiva Loka. They're part of Mahesh Dham. It's complex. Get ready. So then, next we're going to see... there it is. There's the more close-up. There we go. On our right is Karna Dakshay Vishnu, Mahavishnu. At his feet is Lakshmi, but it's actually Rama. And then Shambhu and Durga, so same. Mahakalapur is at the bottom of that dark cloud. So, according to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Lord Brahma is looking up from where he is within Devi Dham, vertically up. So first identified as Devi Dham. Then next above Devi Dham is located Shiva Dham. This is just directly quoting from the purport of this verse, text 43. Shiva Dham, one portion of which is called Mahakala Dham, is enveloped in darkness. Interpenetrating this portion of Shiva Dham, there shines the Sadashiva Loka, full of great light. Don't worry, I'm going to explain this a little bit. A little bit. So above those, now we're looking at the very bottom center of this image, there's Sadashivaloka. So that means Sadashivaloka is in the lower region of Vaikuntha. Although it's Mahesh Dham, is in the lower region of Vaikuntha. We'll remember that because we're going to come back to it. And then above Mahesh Dham is Hari Dham, the abode of Hari. Hari is the name of the Supreme Lord of Vaikuntha, Hari. And this has this central region, as you saw for Goloka. It's a little different, but it's the abode of Lakshmi Narayana at the center and their associates and so forth. And there we go. Yeah, okay. And above Hari Dham is Goloka Dham. This image you've seen before. The lotus in the middle with Radha and Krishna in the center. The four-sided or quadrangular region outside, Swetadweep, the abode of Vasudev and Sankarshan and Pradyumna and Aniruddha, and so many other things, the tridents, and so many other things are inside the Goloka Dham, according to the earlier verses of Brahma Samhita. So, here's a close-up of the lotus of Goloka. You've seen that image before also. Now, where's Mahesh Dham? Well, we can say where it's not. That's easier. It's not in Devi Dham. It's not part of this material world. But it's not Hari Dham either, because Hari Dham is another realm above Mahesh Dham. So if you eliminate, you know, the Mahatattva, you know, the total material energy, and then the Vaikuntha realm and the spiritual sky, where is Mahesh Dham? It's not here, it's not there, it's mysterious. Maybe it's in the Brahmajyoti. But that's where Vaikuntha is, so it's not that either. It's in its own realm. And here's some scriptural references. Hopefully this thing works. Sadashiva Loka, we heard from the purport of this verse that it's on the other side of Devi Dham, so it's in Mahesh Dham, and it's the abode of light. Yes? We heard that. Here's Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adimila chapter 6, verse 79. The verse is speaking about Lord Shiva or Rudra. Rudra, who is an expansion of Sadashiva and who appears in unlimited universes, is also a guna avatar, qualitative incarnation, and is the ornament of all the demigods in the endless universes. And towards the end of the purport, this is Prabhupada's purport, making reference to Vayu Purana. There's 18 Puranas, and it's one of the Puranas. And in the Vayu Purana, it says, there is a description of Sadashiva in one of the Vaikuntha planets. That Sadashiva is a direct expansion of Lord Krishna's form for pastimes. It is said that Sadashiva, parentheses, Lord Shambhu, is an expansion from the Sadashiva of the Vaikuntha planets, Lord Vishnu, and that his consort Maya, Mahamaya, is an expansion of Ramadevi or Lakshmi. Mahamaya is the origin or birthplace of material nature. So what was just said? Well, several things. In two more verses, we're going to hear more about Lord Shiva, specifically, you know, a very often quoted verse, where Lord Shiva is likened to milk that's transformed by a souring agent into curd. You take milk, make it warm, put in something, lemon or some souring agent, tamarind, and it curdles. So what is that curd? It's nothing but a transformation of milk. So it's milk but not milk. It's a milk product, but you can't change curd back into milk. At least most people don't know how to do that. So similarly, Lord Shiva is a transformation. Lord Shiva is a transformation of this Sada Shiva of the Vaikuntha realm. So let's describe again the process of creation, this question of why does creation come into being. So there's Mahavishnu with all the living entities within his body. At the time of cosmic annihilation, he withdraws them again within his body. And he's in his yoga nidra, or mystic slumber, with Rama Devi, enjoying pastimes with him. So then, desiring to see the two things, compassionately desiring to see the living entities restore their fullness potential of consciousness, and compassionately desiring that the reflection, known in this case as Chaya Devi, but the same as Durga, same energy, the reflection of the internal potency, because we're going to hear about her in the very next verse. He's glancing over this energy. Rama Devi takes the living entities, places in charge of the glance of Mahavishnu, even more technically, the halo of the glance of Mahavishnu, and that halo is known as Shambhu. Shambhu is, let's say it backwards, Shambhu is the halo of the glance. He's not the glance. He's the halo of the glance. Rama Devi entrusts living entities and time energy to that halo of the glance, or Shambhu, and zoom, zoom. Shambhu carries the glance and the living entities in time and impregnates, literally, not just figuratively, he impregnates this energy. So the energy of receiving, so the female organ, generative organ, is Durga. She's the consort. Durga is the consort of Shambhu. And together the combination is father and mother. So in one sense, Lord Shiva can be appreciated as the father of all living entities. But we heard something a little bit earlier that Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, he is the seed-giving father of all living entities. So Shambhu is just doing that as a service. So there's Shambhu. Now what Prabhupada just wrote, we read in his purport here, is that it is said that Lord Shambhu is an expansion from the Sadashiva in the Vaikuntha planets. Yes? And his consort, Mahamaya, is the expansion of Rama Devi, or goddess of fortune, Lakshmi. Mahamaya is the origin or birthplace of material nature. So, when this is repeating something from last year, and I remember going over it so many times, just so that it was really clear, we're going over it again so it's again clear, because some persons weren't with us last year, and some persons may not remember 1 year ago. So, that which Mahavishnu glances over, it's the totality of material energy but not separated out or differentiated into the elements. When the glance comes, the energy becomes activated, and two things, the modes of nature separate out, and the elements separate out. Sequentially, the first element that separates out is our dear friend, false ego. And then false ego does lots of stuff. False ego mixes with the modes of nature. And from the mode of goodness, mixing with false ego. Another dear friend, the mind, is produced. And then false ego mixing with the mode of passion, material intelligence, is produced. And then the false ego mixes with the mode of ignorance. And the five material elements are separate out. And then those five material elements combine together to make the five knowledge acquiring senses, the five working senses, the five objects of the senses. The mode of ignorance is really active. And then we have 23 elements. We have what's now, we're going to, as by scripture, is identified as Mahatattva. It's just a transformation of Pradhan, the undifferentiated to the differentiated. So the nomenclature, the difference of terminology, is just to indicate the difference of condition, although it's the same entity. So same as using Mahamaya, it's the same entity. Durga, it's the same entity. So the topic that we're exploring, back to the screen, is where is Mahesh Dham? Well, it's a little mysterious, just like he's mysterious. It is said by Vaishnavas that there are two topics that are particularly elusive and difficult. One of them is Guru Tattva, and another is Shiva Tattva. Because Tattva means truth, so like living entities, their category is Jiva Tattva. That's clear. And then there's the Supreme Lord, Vishnu Tattva. That's clear. Or pretty clear. And then Lord Shiva, it's like, he's a little mysterious. Because he is one category, and he's only the only one that populates that one category. Except that he has different abodes. I mean, different places where he has his abode. You know, people can have different, they can have a home and a summer home and a cottage, and you know. So he has, it's his abode in different locations. So one of them is, the topmost is, the Sadashiva Loka, that's in the lower regions of Vaikuntha, and it's actually like a Vaikuntha planet, but it's the abode of Lord Shiva. And he's not Vishnu Tattva, he's Shiva Tattva, but he's just a direct expansion. Little yes and no at the same time. I can see people had too much breakfast. Some people had too much breakfast, or not enough sleep last night, or something, or a combination. So there's the scriptural reference for Sadashiva Loka. You can have your tablet back if you like. And now here's another one from Brihat Bhagavatamrita. What's that? Brihat Bhagavatamrita is a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam by Sanatan Goswami. And part of that commentary is this verse. It's Gopakumar experiencing the different realms. Just as we're discussing the different realms, this verse is, so he passes through the layers of the universe, describes those layers as I mentioned, each one very fascinating, and then he gets on the other side of the layers of the universe, and very quickly he passes through the causal ocean and enters into the Brahmajyoti, and it's blinding, and he has this encounter with the impersonal feature of the Supreme that seems to attract him, and then he chants his mantra, and then he fades away, and it comes on again. He chants his mantra, and it fades away. And he's had enough of that, so he hears a kirtan from a distance, and he's wondering what that. And it's Sadashiva coming from his abode, Sadashiva Loka, riding on Nandi along with his associates. It is a big kirtan. And he approaches Mahanandi, one of his chief associates, and says, "Who's that?" He said, "Oh, Gopal Kumar, you're not very educated. This is Lord Shiva." And he's worshipped by both liberated souls and the different ghosts and hobgoblins and people like that. Some other people also worship Lord Shiva. People with material desire. So, in this description, according to the associates of Lord Shiva, here's the verse. He is the giver of material enjoyment and liberation, and he expands devotion to the personality of Godhead. He does these three things. Gives material enjoyment. At least he gives a certain kind of liberation, as bhakti can give liberation, and he gives devotion to the personality of Godhead. He is worshipped even by the liberated and is dear to the Vaishnavas. So, anyway, that's a whole section. Lord Shiva is himself a great Lord, Bhagavan, who promotes the process of devotional service to Vishnu. He teaches his own devotees that Bhagavad Bhakti is the supreme goal of life, greater than all others. Of course, those are for those who are Vaishnavas and regard Lord Shiva as a Vaishnava, but many don't. Many regard him as a bestower of material benedictions. That's why they're approaching him. They want this and that and the other thing, and they worship him for this and that and the other thing. So that's one of the abodes. It's Maheshdham, but it's situated in the lower region of Vaikuntha and is called Shiva Loka. Excuse me, Sada Shiva Loka. And then there's Shiva Loka. What's that? Shiva Loka is described, those of you that attended the session last year, you'll remember Mahavishnu, as part of the process of creation, to have universes, multiple universes, he has to have presiding deities of the multiple universes. So from his body, he expands from the left side, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, from the right side, Lord Brahma. This is the prototype Lord Brahma, not the one who is reciting this Brahma Samhita. And from the forehead of Mahavishnu, he generates Lord Shiva, and Lord Shambhu. And this Lord Shambhu, according to Bhaktisiddhanta's commentary, is the source of the Shambhu, who is the glance, or the halo of the glance of Mahavishnu. I'll do it again, because it could be confusing. Those of us that read Srimad Bhagavatam were accustomed to hearing of this wonderful narration from the third canto in the process of creation, described by Maitreya to Vidura, that Lord Brahma is born and he wants to proceed with the process of creation. He does his tapasya and becomes self-realized and so forth. He now wants to do the creation, to get underway. So he does the creation because he's given the intelligence how to do the creation, and then he has to populate the place. So he wants some help. So he creates the four Kumaras, and he makes this little request, "Please help me populate this universe, please." And they go, "No. No thanks, Dad. We want to stay Brahmacharya." And then Lord Brahma becomes upset and angry. He wants their help. And his anger produces Lord Shiva from his brow. And then this Lord Shiva expands into 11 Rudras. And they start tearing up the place. The universe just got started and they start destroying it already. And one of them even starts to attack Lord Brahma. He says, wait, wait. He talks to the Lord Shiva, from whom the Rudras come, and says, you know, this isn't the right time for destruction. We're just getting started. Please tell these 11 Rudras that they can just go meditate, please. Until this time for cosmic annihilation. What's that number? 11,400,000,000 years or something. And then we're ready. I'll give them a call and tell them they can do their destruction. Just go meditate for a while. So where do they go meditate for a while? Mahakalapur. And that's the next image. Mahakalapur. Yes. Whoops. There's the Lord Shiva that's, you know, everybody knows, just as we read from this purport, that the Guna Avatar, or the one responsible for the mode of ignorance, Tamagun, Lord Shiva does that. And part of the Tamagun is destruction. And he has his expansions, the Rudras, that help him in destruction. And he has Durga, his consort, who helps him in his destruction. So the abode of that Shiva is Kailash, the popular demigod. And the one that everyone, well, people that worship Lord Shiva, commonly he's the one they worship. So now we have at least these three, and then we're going to have one more, the Mahakalapur. There we go. Mentioned in the purport of this verse. So he's a mysterious personality, but his dham, although apparently in the lower region of Vaikuntha, and this Sadashiva Loka, the prototype that comes from Mahavishnu, is the second, and his abode is in Shiva Loka. And then there's Kailash, the popular demigod in charge of the modes of nature, the mode of ignorance. And then Mahakalapur. There's the reference, Canto 3, Chapter 12. You can look it up later. It's mentioned that the place where the is it okay? Oh, I see. Okay. The place where the 11 Rudras were told to go and do their meditation, that's Mahakalapur. Do you remember the painting or the poster that showed it? Now you can see on this little chart here, there's four different places. They're all in the category of Mahakalapur. Excuse me, they're all in the category of Maheshnam in these different venues. He's a complex personality. Not only that, there are other references in scripture to Mahakalapur to make it a little more complex. And Mahakalapur is indicated in Brihad Bhagavatamrita as the abode of liberation, not just at the bottom of the universe where the Rudras are waiting to destroy. That's one. There's another abode of liberation. And if you read carefully, or at least you do your folio search in your Srimad Bhagavatam, you'll find that when Arjuna and Krishna went to the abode of Mahavishnu, his abode, the abode of Mahavishnu, is identified as Mahakala Dham. Literally, Maha means great and Kala means time. So the great time is the time of destruction. But then also Mahavishnu is involved in creation, so that's a great time too. Like the great, the full duration of creation and its annihilation. Anyway, that's a little description of where, because that's our verse, where is Mahesh Dham. Devi Dham we know is the universe. Mahesh Dham is above that. And then Hari Dham is above that. So here's Prabhupada describing from Madhya Lila about Mahakala. He writes, when a living entity is liberated from Devi Dham, but does not know the opulence of Hari Dham, he is placed in Mahesh Dham, which is between the other two Dhams. The liberated soul does not get an opportunity to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead there. Therefore, although the Mahesh Dham is Lord Shiva's Dham, and above the Devi Dham, it is not the spiritual world. The spiritual world begins with Hari Dham or Vaikuntha Loka. It's this in-between position. That's Lord Shiva. And after Mahakala Dham, above is this abode of light or Sadashiva Loka. So we have Sadashiva, we have Lord Shiva or Mahesh Dham on both sides. This is now, this paragraph is taken from Tamal Krishnamurti's manuscript on this topic. So give credit where credit is due. Siddha Loka is another name of the Brahmajyoti. So on the other side of the Brahmajyoti, this side, that side. On the lower side, Mahakala, he has a name, Bhutana. Bhuta, you know, ghosts, Bhutas, or atheistic people. He's worshipped by people who want something, but they don't want to approach God, so they approach him, Bhutana. And on the higher side is Sadashiva Loka, and where Lord Shiva, this is important, he worships Lord Sankarshan. Those who are familiar with the Bhagavatam know that there are some prayers that Lord Shiva gives to the Prachetas, the prayers by which he worships Lord Sankarshan. And he gives them, and these devotees, the Prachetas, they become perfected souls by reciting the same stotras as Lord Shiva. And in the purport that we, of the verse we just read, Bhaktisiddhanta similarly states, Shiva Loka or Mahesh Dham, Shiva Dham has both of these, Mahakala and Sadashiva Loka. Here's an image of the 11 Rudras. Lord Shiva, from whom they come, is in the middle. He's doing this Tandava Nritya, his dance of destruction at the end of the universe. And they are too. They're helping him. One down and two to go. That was verse 43. Now we're ready for verse 44. So, Two things before we go on to the translation. These three terms at the beginning, Srishti, Stithi, and Pralaya. You see the word for word, Srishti is creation, like Lord Brahma, he's a Shakya Vesha avatar, as well as a Guna avatar. He's empowered by the Lord's Srishti Shakti, the power for creation. Here it's saying that Durga is doing the Srishti. Well, she's doing the Srishti in the same way that a mother creates the body of the child, but then there's the father that gives the seed that also gets some credit along with the mother, because neither one can produce children without the other. So Srishti, Stiti is maintenance, and Pralaya means destruction. She does all three. Well, the last slide is, how is it that she does all three? We'll hear. And then another I want to point out is this word Icha. I mentioned several times this term Icha. When Mahavishnu desires compassionately that living entities can have their experience, their fullness of consciousness possible, it's a desire. It's Icha. And the way it works in transcendental realm is he doesn't have to do anything. He doesn't have to lift a pinky. I think he's a little baby finger. He doesn't have to do anything. He just desires, Icha. And from that Icha Shakti, the other potencies move because they want to serve him. And the indication of what he wants is through his desire, Icha Shakti. And then, zoom, zoom, things happen. The verse says she's operating under the Icha of Govinda. That's what it says. In accordance with the will of Govinda. So, translation? Oops. The external potency, Maya. Who is of the nature of the shadow of the chit potency, is worshipped by all people as Durga, the creating, preserving, and destroying agency of this mundane world. So we'll spend a little time discussing. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda in accordance with whose will Durga conducts herself. Now she is the consort of Shiva, but both Shiva and Durga see themselves as servants of Govinda. So if Govinda wills, they do. Here's that image again of, if you were here with us last year, or if you haven't, you can go back and listen to them. The image is Mahavishnu on the lower left. He's reclining on the causal ocean and he's glancing. You see those rays coming from his eyes. That's his glance, or the halo of the glance. And that halo is Shambhu. And within the glance, there's living entities in time. Or within entrusted to Shambhu, the halo of the glance, and that living entities impregnated into Durga just by the glance. Remember from our earlier verse in our class, the senses of the Supreme Lord are interchangeable with other senses. So he can impregnate with his eyes. And here's an example. Mahavishnu is impregnating with his eyes. The living entities, the seeds of life, are being carried by his glance, and the womb of material nature, Mother Nature, is receiving those seeds or the living entities. And then creation gets underway. Here's a painting of Durga. Behind her is a lion. And she's carrying different weapons in her hand. She's a nice lady, but don't mess. And here's another close-up of a poster of Durga. So now we're going to hear from Bhakti Siddhanta. There's some of her weapons in her hand. She's pretty active using them. Here's straight from the purport. Bhakti Siddhanta is describing this Devi Dham is the region where the 14 planetary systems are. So those who aren't familiar with the Vedic model, there's upper, middle, and lower planetary systems, totaling 14. Like in the Bible, for example, or the Quran, for example, there's heaven and there's hell, there's upper and lower. And then there's where we are, that's the middle. That's upper, lower, middle. Heaven, hell, and, you know, place that's kind of both. And those that's three divisions, but another is the 14 divisions, and either way is Devi Dham. It's where she resides and presides. Bhaktisiddhanta's description is she is ten-armed. You can count them. This artist got it right. They don't always. She's ten-armed, representing the tenfold fruitive activities. What's that? It's the samskaras. What's that? Samskaras are rituals found within the Vedas that deal with the different transition stages of the soul during life. The first one that we hear a lot about in Hare Krishna movement is the Garbhadhan Samskara. Before impregnation, the soul being passed into the womb of the mother, there's to be a purificatory procedure. In Vedic texts, it's an elaborate procedure of the samskara. And then, you know, each of the different stages. When the soul becomes, again, conscious within the womb of the mother, when the soul takes birth, when the soul is given a name, when the soul, or the living, the embodied soul now takes first grains. And that's signifying, rather than relying upon the body of the mother, it's relying upon something from outside the mother. So that's, there's a ceremony. Each of these, there's 10 of them, and it ends with, guess what? The death ceremony. So each of the stages, 10 in number, they're represented by her arms, or her arms represent those 10. But in each of those 10, you can see she's got weapons. So Prabhupada speaks about this. Materialists, they're very, they make great efforts to try to escape the prowess of Durga. They try to dodge her trident. And if the trident doesn't get them, then the spear will get them. If the spear doesn't get them, the chakra will get them. If the chakra doesn't get them, then the sword will get them. And finally, if they somehow manage to get free from all these things, the lion will get them. You can't escape the prison of Durga by being clever. She rides on the lion, representing her heroic prowess. She tramples down Mahishasura. See that fellow at the bottom getting trampled? He's the personality of vice. There's a long description which we won't go into because the time, the clock keeps moving. But Mahishasura, Durga was given potencies by all the demigods to defeat Mahishasura, and she did. She's the subduer of vices. So don't be filled with vice around Durga. You have a problem. She's the mother of two sons, Kartikeya and Ganesh, representing beauty and success. Interesting, she's placed between Lakshmi and Saraswati, representing mundane opulence and mundane knowledge. Boys, please. So, sometimes I've seen posters where there's three devis and I'm wondering who's who. Now we know. In the middle, Durga. And she has two devis that are assisting her, mundane knowledge mundane opulence to keep people in the prison house. Yes? Mundane knowledge doesn't get one other than more implicated in the prison house. Mundane wealth, same thing. And thus when there's bhakti within, and then that knowledge can be used in service to Krishna, wealth can be used in service to Krishna, and then the very same energy serves to be liberating rather than binding. We're going to hear some more about that in just a moment. She is armed with 20 weapons, although she only has 10 arms. She has 20 weapons, representing the various pious activities enjoined by the Vedas for suppression of vices. So, supposing you have a tendency for this vice, that vice, or the other vice, a non-devotional procedure might be this ritual, that ritual, because Durga will help you subdue your tendency for vice. If you approach her, she won't use the weapon. She'll assist you overcoming that vice. And there's rituals for that within the Vedas. She holds the snake, representing the beauty of destructive time. Again, this is Bhaktisiddhanta's language. Again, Bhaktisiddhanta, Durga, that's the person, is possessed of Durga, which means prison house. So Durga presides over Durga. She's the prison warden over the Durga, the prison itself. When jivas, begotten of the material potency, to touch the Shakti, forget the service of Krishna, they are confined in the mundane prison house, the citadel of Durga. So, pictured on the right side, that's Krishna overseeing the three modes of nature, or overseeing fruitive workers. And indeed, it's described as a prison house. Try to get out of the prison house. There are bars. So those bars of the prison house are similarly the modes of nature. Anywhere you turn, there's the modes of nature. Do it this way, do it that way, or the other way. Try to be nice. It's a mode of goodness. There's a prison bar. Whatever direction you turn. So there isn't a means to get out of material existence by worship of Durga. Rather, by worship of Durga, she does other things. She punishes the wicked, and she provides facilities for those who are nice. Material facilities that keep them bound. Another painting, Durga. This fellow is chopping off the head of a cow, and she's going to chop off his head. Another illustration, the lion and Mahishasura. Here's a verse from our Srimad Bhagavatam about Durga, where Shukadeva Goswami says, the illusory energy of the Lord cannot take precedence, being ashamed of her position. But those who are bewildered by her always talk nonsense. One of Hari Vilas's favorite words is nonsense. Right? Nonsense. So, here's the explanation in Prabhupada's purport. Knowing well that her master desires to free the conditioned souls from endlessly revolving through hellish and heavenly planets, she must nevertheless do her duty to keep them in the universal prison as long as they remain unreformed. For this, she is ashamed to stand before the Lord. That's Durga. And just to help us understand how the language is derived, this dur-diya Dhyā is like contemplation or intelligence, like bad intelligence, dur dhyā, bad intelligence, ill-conceived. She's feeling bad about the situation. I have to punish people when really what the Supreme Lord wants is to come back. But because they're rebellious, I have this service. So she feels ashamed to stand before the Lord. Oops. And there she is. She's got more arms than 10 here. Now, a very nice understanding comes next, and we're done. By means of the subtle body, the jiva forsakes one gross body and takes recourse to another. So the subtle body carries the soul to the next body, reincarnation. The jiva cannot rid of the subtle body, full of nescience and evil desires, until liberated. So it continues and continues and continues. Luckily, when the conditioned jiva comes in contact with self-realized souls and their natural appetite for the loving service of Krishna is aroused, Durga herself then becomes the agency of their deliverance by the will of Govinda. Like your question about karma and the spiritual world, and is it he's deciding for us or we're deciding? So yes, we're deciding, but if we decide I want separate enjoyment, then this Durga feature comes. But if the free will changes, then the very same personality serves to liberate us. She gives us facility for service. Here's this and that and the other thing, facility for service. Same personality. She actually wants us to come to the position of serving. If we're the rebellious one. So, here's a painting from a pastime that many of you know, almost all of you know. It's when Kamsa tried to kill the eighth son of Devaki. It was a trick, because it wasn't Krishna who had appeared as the eighth son of Devaki. He had already been taken to another place, the other side of the river Jamuna, and Yogamaya, you remember correctly, Yogamaya was the one that he was trying to kill. He took the child by the legs, ready to slam the child on a stone slab. And the child slipped from his hands. Yogamaya slipped from his hands and took the form of Durga and blasted, "Kamsa, you fool! The eighth child of Devaki has already taken birth. You stop killing children or you're going to get my trident." And she then left. So Yogamaya, in this case, became Durga, but it can work the other way. Durga can become, act like Yogamaya. And it all depends on one thing. What is your regard for Krishna? What is your regard? For the regard for Krishna is devotion, and I wish to serve him. Not because I don't want to get slammed by Durga, but I wish to serve him in devotion. Then one can encounter the transcendental Durga, different than the one that other people commonly who worship Durga here and there are in interacting with. And to cap it all off, in his commentary, not within our Brahma Samhita, but within Jiva Goswami's commentary of Brahma Samhita text 3, this he mentions specifically, and there are several verses which I'm not going to go into because of time, but he quotes verses that support the statement that the original Durga is Radharani. So if we have ill regard for Krishna, then that potency, Durga, transforms into this other one, the one that instructed Kamsa, you better watch out. You stop your bad activity or you're going to get it. And last, this is our Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Was met once by Durga or Parvati, and that the pastime is described in Navadvip Dham Mahatmya as follows. One time Lord Shiva in Kailash, he was singing and calling out loudly Gauranga's name, and he was becoming mad in ecstasy, chanting Gauranga, Gauranga, Gauranga. And Parvati said, what is this, Gauranga? I've never heard this name and I've never seen you in such a state of ecstasy before. What is this, Gauranga? And Lord Shiva then instructed Parvati. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is Radha and Krishna combined in one form. And he shares love of God with the world freely, freely distributing love of God and chanting the holy name in ecstasy of love of God. In this way, he distributes love of God to everyone without consideration. She said, I've never heard this before. Where do I find him? I'd like to go see him and worship him. So he will appear in Navadvip. So she goes to Navadvip and performs austerities and calling out Gauranga's name. And then Gauranga appears before her. And she's astonished to see this beautiful golden form of Gauranga. And you see this pastime where she reaches to touch his feet, takes some dust from his feet and places it in the part of her hair, and thus the name Simanta Dweep, the island where Parvati placed dust from Lord Chaitanya's feet on the part of her hair. And then she offered the following prayers. She said, I please be merciful upon me. I always have this service that I'm ashamed of, we found from Canto 2, Chapter 5. I have to always give punishment and harsh treatment to conditioned souls that do sinful activities, and I never get your association. So please be kind upon me. And so she replied, this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Navadvip Dham Mahatmya. Lord Chaitanya is saying to Parvati, O Supreme Goddess, listen carefully to my words. You are my energy. You are not separate or different from me. My one energy has two forms. Within the spiritual kingdom, my original energy has one form as Radha. But for carrying out the activities of the material world, she has expanded herself as you. Without you, my lila could not be accomplished. For in the form of yoga maya, you are necessary in my pastimes. In Braja, you are eternally present as Purnamasi. And in Navadvip, you are present as Pradamaya, along with Kshetrapal Shiva, guardian of the Dham. So she serves Govinda, or serves Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the personality of Godhead, in the spiritual and the material world. And depending upon how we regard Govinda or Krishna, we'll see this feature or that feature. That's the understanding that we're being given. I thought I was done. So now these three terms at the beginning. Srishti, creation. Stiti, maintenance. Pralaya, devastation. How is it that Durga does all three? And the answer is found in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adilila Chapter 5. This is now Prabhupada's purport from that verse. Quoting from the real scriptures in his commentary on Bhagavad Gita 4:6, We just happen to have Bhagavad Gita with us. And the page marked in 4:6. I will. Ajopi san avyayatma bhutanam ishwaropi san prakritim svam adishtaya sambhavam yatmamayaya. Although I am unborn, Krishna is speaking to Arjuna, although I am unborn, and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I am the Lord of all living entities, by my internal energy, I still appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. That's the verse. The Madhvacharya's commentary on that verse is being referenced. Madhvacharya stated that mother material nature, which is conceived of as the illusory energy Durga, has three divisions, namely Sri Bhuvanila. Those of you from South India, you're very familiar with these terms. Those from North India are less familiar. Those from China never heard them before. Sripu and Nila. There are divisions of Durga's potencies. She is the illusory energy for those who are weak in spiritual strength, because such energies are created energies of Lord Vishnu. Although each energy has no direct relationship with the unlimited, they are subordinate to the Lord because the Lord is the master of all energies. It'll become clearer, a little bit more clear, as we go further. So Prabhupada continues. In his Bhagavad Sandarbha text 23, Jiva Goswami states, the Padma Purana, quote, the Padma Purana refers to the eternally auspicious abode of Godhead, which is full of all opulences, including the energies, Sri Bhuvanila. So there's a little clue. These three are opulences of the spiritual world, and the Supreme Lord in the spiritual world. They each have a function, part of his opulences. The Mahasamhita, which discusses the transcendental name and form of Godhead, also mentions Durga as the potency of the Supersoul in relationship with the living entities. So there's a clue. This Sri Bhuvanila, they're the Lord of the heart, is engaging these three potencies that conduct affairs of material energy for the regulation of living entities that forgot Krishna and they foolishly came to the material world to try to be independent enjoyers. The internal potency acts in relation with his personal affairs, and the material potency manifests the three modes. So they're active in the spiritual world, and they have their counterparts in the material world, and Durga happens to be one of them. So, again, continuing in that same purport, quoting elsewhere from the revealed scriptures, Jiva Goswami states that Sri is the energy of Godhead that maintains the cosmic manifestation. That's the mode of goodness, right? Maintains. Sri is counterpart, the mode of nature, counterpart is the mode of goodness, maintains. Bhu is the energy that creates the cosmic manifestation, or rajas, mode of passion. These terms have their similar or almost synonymous. And Durga, Nila, Durga, is the energy that destroys the creation. All these energies act in relation with the living beings, and thus they are together called Jiva Maya. Now this is all quoting different references, Madhvacharya, Jiva Goswami in the Sandarbhas to help us understand how is it that Srishti, Siddhi, Pralaya, there are functions of Durga, and it has to do with, there's the original Durga, and then there's the reflection of her, or the expansion of her. And she, as a servant, under the will, as the verse says, operating under the will of Govinda, she does all these things. Now, if I didn't have a schedule, I would stop, because I think we've gone enough after breakfast, especially. But I do want to finish all the verses of Brahma Samhita. You know, Sunday's coming around, so I'm gonna do one more verse with your permission. If you're exhausted, we have room. You can go lie down or something. I'm exercising you too much. I don't know what to do, but I have to keep going. Oh, please excuse me. So we're ready for verse 45. Again, this is under, He's the Lord of all Lords, Govinda. And we talked about the abodes, and then we talked about Durga and Devi Dham. Now we're talking about Mahesh, or Mahesh Dham, Lord Shiva. Here we go. Just as milk is transformed into curd by the action of acids, but yet the effect curd is neither the same as nor different from its cause, namely milk. Pretty crude graphics. So, I adore the primeval Lord, Govinda, of whom the state of Shambhu is a transformation for the performance of the work of destruction. And as we see this beautiful painting, Lord Shiva or Shambhu with his consort of different names, Parvati and Durga and Amba, different names. They're worshipping together Lord Vishnu. Milk. And then milk transformed. So Lord Shiva is sometimes spoken of like this as almost Vishnu. But not Vishnu, as curd is not milk. They're not the same. The language of Bhaktisiddhanta, the non-distinction, or the difference between Krishna and Lord Shiva, is established by the fact that just as milk treated with acid turns to curd, so Godhead becomes a subservient when he himself attains a distinct personality by the addition of a particular element of adulteration. So this metaphor of lemon or tamarind or acid or a souring agent, those terms are all used. We're now going to hear a little more particularly. That's the metaphor of milk and yogurt. Now we're going to hear what there's three particular elements of adulteration that makes Lord Shiva in another tattva or another category. Here they are.
Bhaktisiddhanta, right from the purport.
The said adulterating principle is constituted of a combination of one, the stupefying quality of the deluding energy. Like, you know, husbands may take on qualities like their wife. You associate with someone, you may take on qualities like that someone. So, possible if you're transcendental, that's not going to happen. But in this case, by associating Shambhu's associates with the material energy, he takes on a portion of the stupefying, bewildering quality of material nature. That's one. This is part of the adulterating thing that happens, that transforms him from Sadashiva to Shambhu. Two, the quality of non-plentitude of the marginal potency. Marginal potency of living entities. Living entities are tiny. So the tiny feature of the living entities is partially, a little bit, taken on by Lord Shiva. So he's not fullness of Vishnu. He's not a living entity either. But the non-plentitude dimension or aspect of the living entities, he takes on some of that. Bhaktisiddhanta is instructing. And number three, a slight degree of the ecstatic cognitive principle of the plenary spiritual potency. Again, Bhaktisiddhanta's language. But in the spiritual realm, there is spiritual potency. And the fullness of that spiritual potency, let's say Lakshmi or Radha in the spiritual world, have these potencies of full knowledge and bliss. So Lord Shiva takes on a part, a slight degree of that. So that's the indication from Bhaktisiddhanta in his purport of the aspect or the components of the adulterating principle that brings this transformation from milk to yogurt. What's the souring agent? What's the adulterating principle involved? And then in the purport of text 33 is way back there, Goloka reveals itself to every jiva soul when he is under the influence of the spiritual cognitive potency joined with the essence of ecstatic energy. Remember that discussion? Ladini and Sambit potency or Sattva. Radharani and the power of cognizance from the spiritual side. When the living entity is infused with that, bhakti begins. And the Goloka is revealed. And anyone is eligible for that. That's what's being stated. The ecstatic function, that's Radha, the ecstatic function of devotion is boundless and is surcharged with unalloyed transcendental knowledge. That is, when you engage in devotional service, causelessly knowledge will also come. Bhagavatam teaches us that. Anyone know the verse? Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojataha Janiyati Ashu Vairagyam Jnanam Cha Yad Ahaitukam. You engage in devotional service to Krishna, causelessly knowledge and detachment come, which is what's being said here by Bhaktisiddhanta. The power of devotion, bhakti, gives knowledge and detachment. It's part of the process of bhakti. Here's something stated by Srila Prabhupada in Nectar Devotion, Chapter 21. These characteristics of Krishna. We know that there's 64. We mentioned that four characteristics are exclusively with Govinda or Krishna. There's five that Vishnu and Narayana have in the Vishnu Tattva forms. And there's another five that also Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma have. Here's the five. And but it's, notice the language is, it's partial. Partially manifested, these five. Changeless, all cognizant, ever fresh, Satchit Ananda. Krishna has that in full. And we heard Lord Shiva has partial. And possessing all this, so certainly Lord Shiva has mystic perfections, as does Lord Brahma. Changeless. How can you be partially changeless? Here's an explanation. The duration of our life is like a flash in the realms of the higher personalities. Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma. Imagine, Prabhupada speaks of this insect, I guess, you know, it's an insect that's known, kind of popular or a number of abundant in West Bengal, where he grew up, where the life cycle is 24 hours, something like that. So imagine, in your day, your 24-hour day, here's this insect that takes his birth, he grows, he goes to school, he gets his education, he gets married, he has a family, and his children have grandchildren, he gets old and dies. And it happens within 24 hours of your time. Now, that will seem, your one day passing will seem like you haven't changed at all to that insect. Or do it the other way around. You know, anyway, you get the time is relative. In each day of Brahma, there's 1,000 yuga cycles. So then, in how many days in a year, and how many years in a lifetime? So our lifetime, if we're born, and we look at Lord Brahma, and then we, just before we die, we look at Lord Brahma, we're not going to see any change at all. In that sense, changeless. Partially. Relatively. And similarly, all cognizant. You know, what Lord Brahma is not all cognizant as Super Soul is, but the vastness of wisdom of Lord Brahma, to comparison to our little puny capacity, it's practically all cognizant, but it's not equal. Partially all cognizant, partially assembly, partially ever fresh, partially Satchitananda form. And compared between the two, yes it is. So the living entities have these 50 qualities partially. Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva have them more, and Krishna has them in full. And then there's another 5 qualities that they have partially, that living entities don't have at all, and Lord Krishna has them in full. So what's being stated here basically is Lord Shiva is in a superior position to Lord Brahma. And this quote from Brahma Samhita, this is 49 is in relation to Lord Brahma. It's in the same section, but I'm making reference here. The divine nature is present to a greater measure in Shambhu than in Brahma. The fundamental significance of the above is that the aggregate of 50 attributes belonging to the jiva are present in a fuller measure in Brahma, who possesses in a lesser degree 5 more attributes which are not found in the jiva. But in Shambhu, both the 50 attributes of the jiva and of also the 5 additional attributes found in Brahma are present in even greater measure. than in Brahma. I think we have just two slides and we're done. So, in both of these affairs, creation, Shambhu is the glance or the halo of the glance of Mahavishnu. He's directly involved, as is Durga. And in destruction, he's involved directly for the purpose of destruction. He and the Rudras, they do their destruction program. And it's connected, we'll see in a little bit, a few more verses, with Lord Ananta. There's teamwork. Shambhu, in pursuance of the will of Govinda, works in union with his consort Durga Devi by his own time energy. Then, as far as destruction is concerned, Govinda manifests himself as Guna Avatar in the form of Shambhu, who is the separated portion of Govinda imbued with the principle of a subjective plenary portion. Difficult language, isn't it? But he's saying precisely what he means. Imbued with the principle of his subjective plenary portion means he has partially the qualities of Lord Vishnu. And where does he derive those from? Lord Vishnu. That's what he's saying. Shambhu performs the work of destruction of the material world. I'm going to skip this next one. It's just because of time. You can look this reference later at your own leisure. 3.12.11, where in Prabhupada's purport, he's explaining that Rudra embodies the egoistic principle. Remember the glance of Mahavishnu, the first element that separates out his false ego. Remember that one? You're really tired. I lost you all. I know there's one, yes, okay. The elements are unmixed they're mixed and then they become separated. False ego is the first one. The statement is Lord Shiva is the emblem of that. So if anybody has any false ego, maybe you know somebody somewhere that has a false ego. All living entities born in this material world, that's the first thing that happens. We get enveloped in false ego. And Lord Shiva is the emblem of that. So, what to do? We worship Krishna, and all of that slackens and falls away. That's the message, because the power of Lord Shiva comes from Govinda. And you worship Govinda, and Lord Shiva becomes your well-wishing friend. You know, false ego subsides. Yay! There he is, Lord Shiva. And because one time I was making this presentation and somebody asked, what's this moon on the head that we see of Lord Shiva? So here's a little research, came up with this answer. Bala Chandra. Bala means strength, Chandra means moon. The crescent moon was produced from the churning of the milk ocean because of its cooling effect. Balachandra was offered to Lord Shiva to wear on his head since he was feeling dizzy from having drunk the poison. Sri Brahma Samhita ki? Congratulations, God's made it. It was, imagine having this same subject matter where you have to have a translation for everything that you say in Chinese. But we had 7 days. Anyway, any comments or questions? Yes.
There are like four questions online, Maharaj.
Okay, let's go.
Okay. The first one is from Radha Dutti Mataji. She says, I have a question regarding the 14 planetary systems within each universe. I see that the planets of ghostly spirits lies above Earth planet. How is it so?
Well, what was the last line?
I see that the planets of the ghostly spirits lie above the Earth planet.
Well, I don't have an answer for that. Because I'm not really clear, you know, Bhuvar Loka, exactly what that is. So I can't answer that question. What's the next one?
How to understand Shambhu as the halo of glands of Mahavishnu from Kasturi Manjari Mata?
Well, it says that's what Lord, that's what Bhaktisiddhanta says. There's a glance, and the glance of Mahavishnu is not different than Mahavishnu. But there's the halo of the glance, and that's Shambhu. So the distinction between the halo of the glance and the glance. Shambhu is the halo of the glance. I don't understand it, just receive it in the descending manner. That's what I've done. I mean, it's like, what's the halo of a glance? Normally we don't see glances give light, or to speak of a halo. But, you know, we don't see Mahavishnu glancing either.
And next question is actually similar question from two devotees, Kasturi Manjari Mataji and Rajakopa Prabhu. Question is, how are the workings of the Guna Avatars related to the functioning of Sri, Bhu and Leela for Srishti, Siddhi and Pralaya?
Well, I don't know anything more than what is said here. So they can go back and, you know, see it. Or they can take the reference that said it and read it again. I can't illuminate or elucidate more than this is connected with that. It's an arrangement of the Supreme Lord that Sri maintains in the mode of nature, maintains the material creation. He gives some service to her or the reflection of her. That's how it works. Bhu and Leela. Leela is destruction. Bhu is creation. The potency of the Supreme Lord is invested with that responsibility or that service. And she does it. She wants to serve. She makes the arrangement. You know, each of these consorts or potencies, they have their sub-potencies. They can, you know, that sub-potencies assist them, and their sub-potencies do this and that and the other thing. I think that's the way to explain it.
Then one more question is from Keshav Prabhu, who is the son of Virajita Singh Mataji.
Okay.
He asks, how did we come to know about Brahma's prayers if they were spoken before the universes were created?
There's no information in how this literature was composed. The only information we have is it's from Lord Brahma. I mean, one could say other things. There wasn't anything to write with. There wasn't anything. So at some point it became written. And there's no information in how it became written. The only information we have is Lord Brahma spoke these prayers. And the other details of Brahma Samhita, the process of creation. It's advisable in all circumstances to avoid speculation. No question, no harm in asking a question, but if one doesn't have the answer, don't speculate an answer. Just, you know, we only know through descending knowledge, and otherwise, what do we know? Better, Prabhupada said, better remain silent than speculate. Yes. Where's the other microphone? Oh, okay. You want to take it back here? Will you have it back here? Go ahead.
Maharaj, we started the seminar with much easier to understand, you know, language, beautiful pastimes. Now it's getting really complicated and detailed. I'm honestly having a very difficult time following the details.
Don't worry about the details. That's something that I said way at the beginning, is if you get lost in the details, don't worry about it. And the complexity, don't worry about it. Try to understand two things. Try to understand the essences of what's being presented, and understand that because it's glorification of Krishna, it's elevating. It'll spiritualize just by hearing. And in the previous seminar, I gave this example. Tamal Krishna Maharaj explained that sometimes when they were traveling in India, Prabhupada would be conducting programs in Hindi because the audience didn't understand English, so he spoke in Hindi. So after Kirtan, the devotees wanted to get up and go away because they couldn't understand anything. It was all in Hindi. And Prabhupada admonished them. He said, just stay. Just because the sound vibration will be purified. And they had faith that it will be purified. And then Prabhupada also spoke. I mean, what to speak of sitting right next to you is some of the... There's so new in Krishna consciousness. The detail is like goodness. So, the faith is, have a little conversation with her. How is she sitting through all this? So, the sound vibration is purifying. And as she shared after the first class, you know, the time will come out when Krishna wants me to understand all these things, I'll understand all these things. Until then, it's just purification. Like Prabhupada said, similarly, about Bhaktisiddhanta. And it was in his same language, but his language was so high, this is like terminology more than language, his language was so high, as he would speak, my brain was puzzled. And if Prabhupada's brain is puzzled, what to speak of us? But he said, I stayed and I listened, having faith that I'll become purified. And because of that quality of having listened, my spiritual master was pleased. He marked me. He likes to listen. That was the comment that he made when the day he was initiated. When his name was called, oh, Abhay, he likes to listen. And then Prabhupada said, because of that quality of listening, now he can write. Because it wasn't that as he was listening, he understood. My brain was puzzled. So if your brain is puzzled, you're in good company. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. It's not, as I said, also, it's not an intellectual, this is not an intellectual exercise. It's not like attending a university class and you're going to be examined at the end on, did you understand all the technical points? It's not that kind of intellectual exercise. It's a spiritual experience of hearing sound vibration that we may understand, may not understand, but it's a spiritual sound vibration, and gradually it awakens things. And especially the essences, the essences of all these wonderful personalities that you meet people that worship Lord Shiva, and they have great faith in Lord Shiva, and that's it. Now, from our perspective, we want to respect that faith, but where does the power of Lord Shiva come from? And there's an essence. He's receiving the power from Govinda, and he worships. And with his prayers, Lord Sankarshan, expansion of Govinda. So we can know that. Not like judge the other person, but you know, our faith can be not disturbed while we're respecting another person's faith. You know, essence-wise. And then details are also... I discussed this. Just like, you know, if I hear some classical music, I don't hear classical music, but supposing I used to in high school. So I hear some classical music, and it sounds nice. But supposing there's a trained person, a skilled musical person, when they hear an orchestration of some symphony presentation, They hear all the details and details, and that's part of the beauty, isn't it? Or a painting. You know, it's one thing, you know, a painting, and then it's like very, very detailed painting. So beautiful. I mean, how much labor of love of that artist went into that painting, aside from their skill. And, you know, it enriches your experience. Even you may not be like a qualified artist. Think. The details are not the essence. The essence is the essence. The details enrich and stimulate, and, you know, I'd like to learn more. I'd like to understand these things. At least, you know, it may help me understand the essence more, because that's what the details are for. Embellish the essence. My love for Krishna. Yes.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. In Ramayana, when Hanuman flies to Himalayas the first time, Valmiki gives a huge description of all the abodes he sees, which includes Brahmakosha, Kailas, the place of Kuber, the place of Varun, the place of Agni. How do all of those reconcile with what is mentioned in Brahma Samhita?
I don't know, because I don't know what it says. You're the Ramayana scholar, not me.
I'm not a scholar.
Okay, you're the Ramayana fan, not me. I don't have an answer, because I don't know what it says.
May I write it down and give it to you?
Yeah. I don't know if that'll help. Because you're asking, you know, let's see. I doubt it. In advance. But you can go ahead. I'll take a look. I'm not challenging you. I'm just being frank. And, you know, let's see.
Because I always wondered how the abode of Brahma came within the pathway from Lanka to Himalayas. And I just thought that he was out there.
Yeah.
But that doesn't...
I'm not familiar. You can write it down. And let's see what comes out of it. Yes.
Maharaj, this is a question about Sri Guru and Leela.
Okay.
So he talks about Sri Sri.
He's from South India.
So this particular verse of the Brahma Samhita kind of plays in right with the philosophy of the Devi worshippers, saying that Devi is the creator, Devi is the maintainer, and Devi is the narrator.
Okay.
So they may use this to say Devi is everything.
They'll lose one everything.
Devi is the creator, maintainer, and narrator. The Bhu, Sri, and Leela.
So what's the point?
They may not have the information that Govinda is presenting that potency to Devi.
So you're making a comment?
Yes.
Okay. I thought it was a question, but it's a comment. Fine.
The second one is Lord Shiva has 50 of the Jiva qualities plus 5 additional qualities.
Correct.
But in a greater degree. Magnitude compared to Brahma.
Exactly.
But Lord Shiva comes from Brahma.
That's okay. No problem. That's just how he, you know, how he makes his appearance in the world. He's not from Lord Brahma. They're coexisting. They're, you know, back on text 15, before there's Lord Shiva that comes from the brow of Brahma, simultaneously the prototypes of all three are created. Brahma, Vishnu, and Garbhadakshay Vishnu. The prototype Brahma before there's Lord Brahma, and the prototype Shiva before there's Lord Shiva who appears from the brow. I mean, Mahavishnu, he has this like, he seems to like to appear from brow. So the prototype appears from the brow of Mahavishnu, not to be confused with Lord Shiva, the Guna avatar, the demigod that many people worship, as the son of Lord Brahma, appears from his brow. But, you know, so the two, the prototype two, they're simultaneous. That's just how he makes his appearance in the world.
Thank you.
Yeah, enthusiastic.
So, Brahma said the Brahma Samhita, right? But then who actually wrote it first?
We went over this 3 times, and I don't know. There's no information. All we know is he spoke it. And how it came to be in a written form, we don't know. Okay. Bala?
Maharaj, I have a couple of questions that relate to the previous session.
Okay.
That was on this morning. So the first mention, there was this mention of we have the imperfect senses. That's one of the four defects.
Yes.
But this was an interesting question. Came sometime before. I heard that. How is it that this is Krishna's perfect plan that we have imperfect senses? I mean, whatever Krishna does is perfect.
Okay.
So a question could arise that how is it a perfect plan to actually give us imperfect senses?
Somebody have a better plan? because conditions.
It is perfect plan.
Yes, it is.
And so, I mean, it's more of a question.
And why is it? Because, you know, living entities that are rebellious, they wish to enjoy separately from Krishna. It's illusion. So if you want to provide the opportunity for living entities to try to enjoy happiness that doesn't exist, well, you have to do a few things, like create illusion, because there isn't happiness apart from him. And imperfect senses makes it look like, hey, there's some happiness out there. And then acquiring knowledge, well, I can't acquire knowledge because I have imperfect senses, the instruments for acquiring knowledge. It's just, you know, defective by design. It's a perfect plan.
I have a second question.
Yeah.
This is also related to the previous session. So, with the example of Draupadi was discussed at snow when she tried initially and then she lifted her hands. It's more of a common question, but maybe we can get some more guidance from you. Essentially, we can see we don't want to be on this side where we become lazy in terms of being dependent on Krishna and whatever Krishna does.
Right.
Whereas not go on this other side where we neglect Krishna, become too proud of doing something ourselves. So what we see is the pure devotees. And devotees, we see that they actually become where they are striving hard like anything while being completely dependent on Krishna and being completely humble. That is the position of the elevated devotee, and that's what we want to strive for. But we can get, it's so easy to get caught in either of these other ends. So, how to be more cautious of practice so that we actually
follow instructions. You know, like, don't over-endeavor and don't be complacent. Because that thing, you know, don't go either extreme. Don't over-endeavor and don't be complacent. I remember hearing Prabhupada say, if there's one thing I can say for myself, I was never lazy. Then describe, even as a small child, you know, describe. So, but endeavoring for Krishna and depending upon Krishna is a whole other thing. So we don't, you know, just Krishna consciousness is the solution with proper guidance, following the instructions. And then we avoid the left side of the ditch and the right side of the ditch. We stay in the middle of the road. Keep your hands on the steering wheel. Pay attention, be alert, listen to the instructions. Yeah? 2 more and move on.
This question is from Harivalla Prabhu. He asks, I had a question on the children of Lord Shiva. There is a reference that Lord Ayyappa, who is the son of Lord Shiva and Mohini Murthy, is there any reference to this in the scriptures?
0 that I'm aware of. Next question.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, I had a question about when you were describing the four places where is Lord Mahesh. So one of them was the popular demigod, as you said, who lives on Kailash.
Yeah.
So I understand that all the demigods also get destroyed at the time of the dissolution of the universe.
Correct.
So does that particular form of Lord Shiva also get destroyed as the demigods get destroyed?
Does he get destroyed also, is your question?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And does the same of, please correct me, I understand that Lord Sadashiv does not get destroyed because he's outside the...
What you're saying is logical, but logic is fallible, isn't it? So it sounds logical, but I don't know any scriptural reference that says it. That's my reply. Sounds good. I don't know. Because we know from descending knowledge, then we know.
One more question.
Yeah.
When you said Mahavishnu, from his glands, his prototype Shambhu was created?
Yes.
But we, isn't Lord Mahavishnu in slumber, like he's sleeping? Mahavishnu is in slumber, right? Like in deep sleep?
Well, no. He's yoga nidra. Nidra is the word for sleep, but his sleep is not like our sleep. He's fully conscious. Superlatively fully conscious. He's just enjoying pastimes with Rama Devi within, that's all. Instead of the other kind. It's a euphemism, not sleep as we know it. It's transcendental. Enjoying with Rama Devi within, eternal pastimes. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki?
Jai.
Jai.